From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Welcome, Nike and Steve.
Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure.
Well, here are the issues. President Biden welcomed India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi to the White House, rolling out full pageantry for Modi's official state visit and state dinner. The White House aims to bolster its partnership with India despite ongoing concerns about human rights. China hit back after President Biden referred to President Xi Jinping as dictator, saying the remarks were absurd and a provocation in an unexpected spat following efforts by both sides to lower tensions. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Chinese leaders in Beijing, saying the U.S. and China have an obligation to manage their relationship responsibly. And a Chinese aircraft carrier group sailed through the sensitive Taiwan Strait on Wednesday amid heightened military tension over the island Beijing claims as its own territory. Britain and Ukraine co-hosted a two-day conference in London to rally support for Ukraine's rebuilding and recovery from Russia's invasion. A Delaware U.S. attorney announced that a plea agreement had been reached with President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, potentially avoiding incarceration or a trial. Some U.S. lawmakers are criticizing the deal. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said that Hunter Biden's plea agreement reflects a two-tiered system of justice and called it a sweetheart deal. A Florida judge has set a tentative trial date of August 14th for former President Donald Trump in the Justice Department's case over his retention of classified documents. The date is almost certain to be pushed back to give both sides more time to prepare for the historic case. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Well, Steve, the White House pulled out all of the stops for a state visit for India's leader, Narendra Modi, this week. What type of partnership is the White House hoping for with India?
Well, this is all about the United States trying to draw New Delhi closer to it. The Indians are reluctant, to put it diplomatically, to enter into any sort of formal military alliance with the United States. But it is in the interest of both countries to be as close as possible, especially in regards to military and economic ties, all because both have a common potential adversary, China, which is right on the border of India.
Also, when we're talking about pulling out all the stops, can you kind of set the scene for us and tell us what that's all about?
Narendra Modi is close to what we could call the royal treatment in the United States as possible with a state dinner. In fact, on Wednesday night, he had a private dinner with President Biden. And then on Thursday, one of these dinners with all the pomp and circumstance. And it's really kind of ironic because 21 years ago, Modi couldn't even get a diplomatic visa to the United States because of atrocities that had been committed in the state of Gujarat, where he was the head of the government, essentially the chief minister. And there are people in the U.S. government that are still concerned about Modi's record on human rights and suppression of the media as prime minister of India. But that is all being downplayed because of the common strategic interest now that these two leaders have.
Yes, that was going to be the next question I was going to raise, is why President Biden is overlooking the human rights issues. And one analyst from the foreign affairs think tank Eurasia Group, Carlone Gray, he says that the United States needs India as a strategic partner to balance against China, both in South Asia and in the Indo-Pacific. And India needs the United States as it develops a more prosperous and green future. So it appears both the U.S. and India have more to lose if they don't forge a partnership, despite the criticism.
Certainly, but our big differences between the officials in New Delhi and in Washington about just how close they should be. The United States is leading what's called the Quad now, which is U.S., Australia, Japan, and India. A lot of those countries, except for India, would like to see that primarily a military grouping. The Indians are very resistant to that. So that is a very significant difference. But from this trip, we can see some deals being made about defense manufacturing, closer diplomatic ties, more U.S. consulates being opened in India, one more being opened in the United States by India, which will be in Seattle. So there are some substantive things coming out of this trip. It is not all ceremony, and it definitely sends a strong message to Beijing.
Modi's visit has big implications for the U.S.-India relations. The U.S. is seeking to ramp up alliance against Russia's aggression in Ukraine and China's economic influence. I would like to share with you, the audience, a story so that we understand what the United States considers this visit as very important. I have been traveling with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to China and to London. And to China, he's starting an important talks, but he set up a deadline. He has to return to Washington by Wednesday so that he can attend the dinner, the important dinner at White House to welcome Modi.
Also, you just mentioned you just back from China and London. And talking about Blinken's visit to Beijing, while there were no breakthroughs that were made during his first visit to China, both sides did agree to continue diplomatic engagement with more visits by U.S. officials in the coming weeks and months. So what is the U.S. hoping to accomplish with these visits to China?
Continue to talk. Set the guardrails in the bilateral relationship so that the two sides will not continue the downward deterioration. The United States and China still have a lot of differences in human rights over Taiwan, over regional security issues, including in the South China Sea and China's aggressions in different areas. The importance is talking so that each other know each other's intentions. And the fact that Blinken meet with the Chinese President Xi Jinping for 35 minutes to go through the difference and then to express the intentions, the competition does not need to veer into conflicts, is important.
Well, shortly after Blinken's return and him saying the U.S. and China have an obligation to manage their relationship responsibly, President Biden referred to China's President Xi as a dictator, and China hit back saying the remarks were absurd and a provocation. So how has this spat between the presidents, how is this affecting China's relations with the U.S. now?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to put this comment into context. It was not a deliberate provocation. I've covered Joe Biden and seen how he operates in person. And what happened, this comment was made at a political fundraiser in California. There weren't TV cameras there. The president probably forgot that there was a small number of reporters in the room and perhaps was under the impression that it was an off-the-record event. That is his mistake. This wasn't a premeditated message being delivered to China. The State Department and the White House have tried to clean it up as quickly as possible, but saying, you know, everyone needs to defend the U.S. interests and what the United States stands for. So no apology coming through. And certainly the Chinese had reason to be upset by this very ill-timed comment by the President of the United States.
So I guess the U.S. does not see this as being a major thing that's going to affect their relationship with China after Blinken's visit.
Well, I know Nike was covering the spin control that the spokesperson at State Department was making on this the morning after the comment came out.
Yeah, the morning after comment by the State Department deputy spokesperson Patel during a regular press conference, he kind of tried to clean up and then he said it should not come as a surprise that U.S. and China has differences and disagreements. And the president believes that diplomacy, including Blinken's trip to China, is a responsible way to manage tension. So he kind of sort of like shrug it off the dictator comments of, although we witnessed the firsthand Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs is not very happy. Right after Blinken left Beijing, the president made the dictator remarks. And of course, State Department again is put on the spot to clean up all this drama.
Nike and Kim, I think this is just a great reminder, because we saw this happen in the Trump administration where the president would say something and just demolish some carefully orchestrated diplomatic maneuvers over many months, much to the frustration of their aides and the senior diplomats, secretaries of state in the government. And these presidents sometimes are not as diplomatic and disciplined as the career diplomats.
Yeah, very, very good point. And also another incident occurred after Blinken's visit. A Chinese aircraft carrier group sailed through the sensitive Taiwan Strait on Wednesday amid heightened military tension over the island Beijing claims as its own territory. So what is the concern with this, Nike?
The concern is that Taiwan Strait is a international waterways and a lot of ships and container ships sail through. If there is any military conflict or a military escalation, it's going to affect the global economy gravely. The U.S. has been very clear that any military escalation in Taiwan Strait is going to affect the capability for other countries to distribute goods, and especially Taiwan is a center for high-end, upscale semiconductor chip productions. And then if there is a military escalation, it's going to disrupt the production, and then the semiconductor chips production is going to affect anything, any electronics from our iPhone, our computer, our vehicles, cars. So the consequence is grave.
We also had this week, for the first time in 7 years, I believe, a U.S. Coast Guard cutter sailed through the Taiwan Strait. So that just coming after Blinken's visit to Beijing, too, was obviously something provocative in the eyes of the Communist Party in Beijing. So the United States is also saying, you know, China, whatever you're doing with the Taiwan Strait, we're going to match it tit for tat, and we're going to demonstrate our commitment to free passage.
Well, from Beijing to London, the Ukraine Recovery Conference saw U.S. Secretary of State Blinken, U.K. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen address the conference, where some 60 nations attended. And fresh back from his China trip, Blinken said he would welcome China's involvement in negotiating an end to Russia's war in Ukraine. So how important of a role does China play in mediating peace talks between Russia and Ukraine?
What I heard from State Department officials is that they say China could play a role in mediating the peace talks between Russia and Ukraine, but they also very carefully not to give China too much credit about it, because we all know China has influence over Russia. If Xi Jinping tells Russian President Putin to stop the war right now, everyone believes that China has that influence over Russia. The U.S. believes that in the partnership between Russia and China, Russia is a junior partner. So U.S. are also kind of skeptical about whether or not this is really going to happen. The other side of the story is that we heard from the trip is Russia may not be too happy about the substantial talks between the U.S. and China, because remember when the United States decided to normalize its relationship with the People's Republic of China at that time during the Cold War is to kind of draw China closer to U.S. to counter Russia. So whenever U.S. is having talks with China, Russia is kind of not too happy. This is what we heard. At the same time, whenever the United States wants China to play a role in put an end to Russia's aggression in Ukraine, United States say that China can play a role, but they are also careful about the outcome.
Yes, and also at this conference, Ukraine's allies, they pledged several billion dollars in non-military aid to help rebuild Ukraine once Russia's invasion there ends. So what is Ukraine looking at? Are they really seeing light at the end of the tunnel?
I don't know that there's really any light at the end of the tunnel right now, but it is an assurance to Kiev that once there is some sort of settlement, that the rest of the world is not going to abandon Ukraine to the whims of Moscow, which is really, really important, because Ukraine, before all of this, before the Russian invasion, was turning towards Europe, NATO, and the West in seeking a closer economic and military alliance with the West as a buffer against Russia. I think it's too early to tell just what any sort of endgame for this war is going to be like. People are, you know, saying very clearly that Russia cannot win this war or Ukraine has to win this war. But what does winning mean? Does Ukraine get back 100% of the territory that it had before all of this, including Crimea? Are these eastern parts of Ukraine that had substantial Russian influence before the invasion, will that continue? It looks like it's going to be a very drawn out, complicated affair. And what's happening with the Ukrainian counteroffensive in recent weeks, it's very slow moving. Kiev is reporting gains, minimizing whatever losses are happening. The Russians are acknowledging that it's a tough battle. So it does not look like this is resolved in months, but perhaps years.
Very good points there you've raised. Well, it's time now for a quick break. And when we return, Republican lawmakers are criticizing President Biden's son, Hunter Biden's plea deal. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Well, President Biden's son Hunter Biden was charged with two misdemeanor tax offenses and a felony firearm offense. A plea agreement was reached between Hunter Biden and a Delaware U.S. attorney. The agreement could potentially avoid incarceration or a trial, but a federal judge must first approve this deal. Republican lawmakers are criticizing the deal, calling it, quote, a sweetheart deal, unquote. So will this case now become a campaign issue for President Biden, Steve?
Well, it'll definitely become a campaign issue for the Republican nominee who ends up running against Joe Biden in next year's presidential election, no doubt about that. This is an unfortunate and somewhat sad case involving a person who obviously was suffering from a drug addiction, and we never would have heard about it except for the fact that it was the son of the then vice president and now president of the United States. And the political component of this is that he was, Hunter Biden, that is, conducting business in countries such as Ukraine and China. And there have been all sorts of allegations that Hunter Biden appeared to be boasting that he would bring his father into these deals as leverage to have some sort of favorable agreements. And Republicans have made a lot out of that. But in the eyes of most objective observers, they haven't produced a smoking gun to really prove that there was any involvement, significant involvement or corruption in regards to Joe Biden. There's going to continue to be congressional investigations because the House is in control of the Republicans. They're definitely going to make political hay, as much of it as they can, ahead of a presidential election. And the Justice Department, I think, was really in a quandary here because, you know, anything that was perceived as lenient was going to be seen as political favoritism. And if they had brought down the hammer really hard on Hunter Biden, then you would have had Democrats squawking that there was something funny going on inside the Justice Department to turn this into something political against Joe Biden as well for political purposes. I think you have to compare it to what would have been the resolution of this case if Hunter Biden was not a political figure, and that's the way to judge it. So he's pleading guilty to a couple of charges of not filing income tax, which is a federal crime, and then working out an agreement for a sort of a behavioral diversion program instead of pleading guilty and possibly going to jail for a charge of essentially lying on a form for a gun permit because he was taking crack cocaine at the time. And so if you put in a permit for a gun, you do a test that, you know, you're not taking illegal drugs.
Republican lawmakers are calling this a sweetheart deal, and even some others who have served time for these crimes are saying that that's why they're calling it a sweetheart deal, is because he is not, or at least at this point, not going to have to serve any time for it in prison.
Certainly, this is all being seen through a political prism. And you have to understand that in these particular cases, prosecutors look at what is the background of the individual. And there is no doubt that in past decades, there was not equity in these types of cases. Minorities, especially, you know, anything involving crack cocaine came up, ended up with much harsher sentences than the white collar cocaine, the powdered cocaine. I think this Justice Department under Biden, though, has made a tremendous effort to bend over backwards overall, not talking about this particular case, perhaps, to be more equitable. And in fact, that's been something that's been criticized now by Republicans, that there's too much emphasis on what's called diversity, equity, and inclusiveness in the Justice Department and other elements of the U.S. government under this Democratic Party and the Biden administration.
Former President Donald Trump's criminal trial for keeping classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago home in Florida has a tentative starting date of August 14th, but this is standard for Florida judges in this part of Florida, southern Florida, to set trial dates 6 to 8 weeks from the start of the case. So this trial actually could just be dragging on for months. And Trump continues to garner strong support as he campaigns for the 2024 presidency. Could this case or any of the other investigations and charges against him prevent him from becoming president?
Well, I think it's too early to say. There is a tentative trial date for the classified documents case set for August of this year. Almost certainly that's going to be pushed back because of motions that'll be made by the defense. And there is little expectation that this is all going to be wrapped up by November of 2024, which is the election date. It's certainly unprecedented. We've never had a president or a former president of the United States facing federal criminal charges. We've never had one in this situation who's running again for president after being out of office and losing the election, running against the person who ousted him from office. So overall, very unprecedented. I think most people are hoping that this does not lead to some sort of constitutional crisis in the future.
Absolutely. Well, it's time now to find out what is weighing on the minds of our panelists. So, Steve, what is weighing on your mind this week?
Well, speaking about the 2024 election, I'm pretty much focused on all of these Republicans running for president. It's not just Donald Trump. It's about 14 or 15 other Republicans. And just what sort of factor with all these candidates in the race? Is there someone who emerges as a dark horse because Trump has a healthy lead over all the pack right now, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis? Or does this play to Trump's advantage? The vote potentially being split so many ways in the early primaries, does this help Donald Trump secure his lead? And is it then deja vu from 2020, where we see Joe Biden against Donald Trump running for president?
Very good. Thank you. And Nike, what is weighing on your mind this week?
Tensions in the Taiwan Strait. Taiwan is going to have a presidential election in 2024. It's no surprise that Chinese military keeps putting pressure on the self-ruled democracy. But previous Taiwan's presidential election have shown that the more China tries to intimidate and coerce Taiwanese people, the more it is counterproductive. For example, in 1996, Taiwan was holding its first presidential election. China launched missiles near the Taiwan Strait. One of the U.S. 7 fleets sailed through the Taiwan Strait, which is the international waters. And in the end, Taiwanese people elected Li Denghui, who was seen as the father of Taiwan independence. So I asked Blinken if a democratic election should be a pretext for a military escalation in the Taiwan Strait. He told me the U.S. and many countries have deep concerns about China's provocative actions against Taiwan since 2016.
Very good. Thank you. And thank you both. And we will end the show on those thoughts. My thanks go to our panelists, VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to join us next weekend for more Issues in the News.